Honourable members, we need to start. It's now 9:35. Time is running. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Mushala and other honourable members connected.
My name is Grace Kunja.
Great, Amen. How are you?
I'm fine. No, Pupu Dom Dalo to disappear.
Pupu Dom Dalo, you're connected.
Okay.
It has moved to Mpumalanga. Hey, this GP thing is not working for you.
Almost around the meeting, I crashed for this is the right. I go home, go.
Okay. I go Mpumalanga.
I somewhere, what all career network. So,
you want
to Wanyamalala.
Fighter Mushalunga, Jelu Chairman, who has land in the mountains, man, to get network.
It seems the ANC next to Robert's name is also no connection.
Honorable person, how are you?
That's true.
No, I'm fine.
Honorable person.
Grace, I say the ANC next to Robert's name stands for also no connection.
Not the ANC, man. The chair.
Next time we must be progressive and appoint a chairperson from other parties as well.
Alex, can't we just move forward and I would ask that we support that Grace chair the meeting. We are wasting time. I make that as a proposal since the chairperson is not on.
I thought the correct person is the administrator.
Yeah, don't try to be correct. Let's just move on.
but it's good to be correct, man.
But you guys will only be correct when it suits you.
We are always correct. I thought we are always correct. The key aspect is food is correct.
We live in a dream world. Let's not use politics here.
So that's why I'm saying let's not use politics. Let's follow the principle. So that woman must come and she deal with the process. There's no politics, it's principle. Because once we do those things, next time I will want the same process to apply and you will never accept.
Man, I don't know what's happening here.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Yes, I'm here. I just don't know what is happening. But I'm fine. Can we, the agenda is in front of us. Can we continue? Let me just welcome everybody into the meeting. We will know that we have just come back from a very resounding summit that we were. I know that members did not attend due to late notice of the invitation. We have accepted that in our last meeting. But those that attended will have participated in that summit, and I'm sure we will get the outcomes of those summits for us to use it to oversight progress in as far as those resolutions. Because that meeting was very important, because it was attended not only by members of parliament or politicians, it was also attended by business people, by private sector people, by society in general. SALGA was there and so forth and so on. So it was a very good summit for parliament work of the department. I think it is important that we also do get finished with those resolutions of that summit in order for us to can try and hold the executive accountable to the decisions of the summit. With that in mind, you are welcome into the meeting, and please let's be time conscious on what we are going to do in order for us to be on time on everything we want to do. You are all welcome. Can we get into the second agenda? That is to observe the moment of silence and meditation. Thank you very much. Any apologies, Nosipho?
Good morning, Chairperson. There is an apology from the committee member, Ms. Siyoposingwe, and for Deputy Minister, Ms. Magat.
Good morning, Chairperson. This is Honorable Hadi Edricks. It's a pleasure for me to attend my first meeting on this committee. As a leader of a political party, we have a briefing with the Minister of Finance at 10 o'clock. So I would like to ask permission to be excused and then come back as soon as that briefing is done. You know, if there's not enough money for water and all the summits and this conference that you attended is a waste of time. We need money in the budget to solve the water crisis.
No, you can't say attending a parliament meeting is a waste of money. It is, but your apology is understood.
Thank you very much.
Can we accept that the move? I don't know of the apology. Or must we note them?
Chesake, I note the apologies as presented.
And shall I second him?
I second, Chair.
Okay, thanks. Let's get into the briefing by the Department of Water and Sanitation on the imperatives of water and sanitation on SONA. Can you flight that and start talking to it, minister or the deputy minister or the DG? But I think the minister should open the presentation if the minister is here.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation. Greetings to all the members of the Portfolio Committee. May I recognize Deputy Minister Mashlobo, who is here, Director General, Dr. Phillips, Deputy Director General, Deborah, and I saw Fundagubi, and a number of other senior officials in the department, so special advisors, both of them are here, We will make a presentation here, and it will be done by the Director General. But it is a collective, it is a product for collective work that has been done even prior to the call to the portfolio committee. And we appreciate the opportunity. We appreciate your comments on the summit, the recent summit that we have just held. Indeed, we are quite inspired by it as we analyze the directives and resolutions coming out of there, and we intend implementing them as part of a broader way forward, including from SONA, but also from a number of our meetings, including Cabinet Lekhutla, all of which will form part of a broader way forward by ourselves. But I would just want to highlight one issue in particular that is in the forefront, is provision of water or delivery of water to households, which is our priority, an area of focus. This will include the smaller and bigger schemes and medium schemes. It will also see us focusing on water delivery infrastructure in form of rehabilitating where necessary the issue of water treatment plants and pump stations and actual reticulation. We have decided to collaborate or to promote collaboration via DDM with municipalities that are water service authorities, because we realize that, in fact, just to say, while we note that the general procedure via legislation of various kinds, there has been a practice where water service authorities are the ones that deliver water in communities via reticulation, by and large, with the department assisting from a distance via grants and general guidance. But because of the backlogs and because of the outcry out there in the communities and the actual realization beyond any doubt that there is a national grievance around delivery of water, we have then decided that we will make this a priority, collaborating with municipalities, especially those that are in the light of 99% of municipalities in the country complaining about the lack of capacity on their part to deliver water, but also lack of funding or limited funding on their part, both of which are devastating for delivery of water in the middle of an outcry. We then have decided to explore various interventions aimed at strengthening the hand of government to deliver water, where we will use DDM as a platform and collaborate with provinces, collaborate with municipalities, collaborate with the private sector in particular, to ensure that this is overcome. We are mindful of the need of water for water by business, particularly the mines and the agricultural sector, without which we can't create jobs, without which we can't make progress, including providing food in South Africa. And therefore, this is a very serious matter in terms of delivery of water in those three fronts, and of course to the environment and other users. And therefore, the injunction of the State of the Nation address, which in some part focused on this. We are embracing it and are giving a clear way forward in terms of how we're going to take those injunctions forward via implementation, an implementation program that is quite comprehensive, but all of which are putting that matter top of our agenda in 2022. And we're hoping that we'll get your support and work with you the portfolio committee on water and sanitation. I therefore ask that DG be allowed to make this presentation on our behalf. Thank you very much.
Welcome, DG. Welcome in the portfolio committee. Please talk to us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members, Minister and Deputy Ministers. The way we approach this presentation in terms of the request to respond to the SONA address is that we went through this SONA and we identified five places in the SONA where the President referred to the Department of Water and Sanitation. The first is the President indicated that government has embarked on the process of institutional reform in capacitating the Department of Water and Sanitation and reviewing water boards and as far as their mandates are concerned and ensuring that they serve municipalities in terms of the district development model. The second is the President indicated that a comprehensive turnaround plan is being implemented to streamline the process for water use license applications. The target is to clear the backlog of applications by June 2022 and to process 80% of all applications within 90 days during the next financial year. The third is that legislation has been prepared for the establishment of the National Water Resources Infrastructure Agency and will be published for public comment within the next month. The water quality monitoring system has been reinstated to improve enforcement of water standards at municipal level and enable the DWS to intervene where water and sanitation services are failing. And the fifth is that government has initiated the process of delivering the Mzumbubu Water Project. The project is made up of the Ntabelanga Dam and the Lalini Dam, irrigation infrastructure and hydroelectric plants. Ntabelanga water treatment works and bulk distribution infrastructure to reticulate to the neighbouring communities. So we have prepared our presentation to respond to each of those five points made in the State of the Nation Address, starting with the issue of strengthening support to municipalities for water and sanitation service delivery, including using the water boards more in this regard. So the Constitution makes it clear that everyone has inherent dignity, which is relevant to sanitation, and to have their dignity respected and protected. And that means that government has a duty to intervene where the provision of municipal water and sanitation services is resulting in people's dignity not being respected and protected, such as the current situation with sewage spillages into people's houses in the bowl. The Constitution also requires government to take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve the progressive realisation of the right to water. And it also clarifies that local water supply and sanitation services are a function over which municipalities have executive authority in terms of Section 156 of the Constitution, read together with Schedule 4, Part B. So the Constitution assigns responsibility for water and sanitation services to local government, and changing this constitutional function would require two-thirds majority vote in Parliament. The water boards are established by the Minister in terms of Section 28 of the Water Services Act. The Minister may disestablish a water board after consultation with the respective province, the water board and the Water Services Authority. In terms of Section 29 of the Water Services Act, the primary activity of a water board is to provide water services to other water services institutions, that is, water services authorities, water services providers, and water services committee within its service area. So in other words, in terms of our legal framework, the role of water boards is to support municipalities to deliver water services. The water services legislative framework is clear. However, in our view, we have not been implementing it to its maximum in terms of the water board supporting municipalities. and that means that we have to strengthen the water board's role in municipalities through the various support and intervention channels, and we think that this can be done within the existing legislative framework. Although municipalities have constitutionally executive authority over water and sanitation services, other sections of the Constitution and legislation require government, both national and provincial, to support municipalities and to intervene in municipalities where there is failure of municipal and water and sanitation services. To clarify that in more detail, Schedule 4 of the Constitution indicates that municipal water and sanitation services are a functional area of national and provincial concurrent legislative competence. Therefore, national legislation such as the Water Services Act provides for minimum norms and standards for municipal water and sanitation services. Furthermore, Section 139 of the Constitution enables government to intervene in the affairs of municipalities where there is failure to fulfill their constitutional obligations. Sections 40 and 41 of the Constitution require all spheres of government to work together in a cooperative manner. Section 62 and 63 of the Water Services Act enable DWS to intervene in municipalities where monitoring of municipal water and sanitation services by DWS indicates failure to adhere to national norms and standards, subject to Section 139 of the Constitution. Sections 19 and 20 of the National Water Act also enable DWS to intervene and remedy pollution of water resources and to recoup the costs of such intervention from the polluters. That could enable DWS to intervene when municipal wastewater treatment plants, for example, are resulting in pollution of the environment, people's homes, and rivers. So, in that constitution and legal framework, we want to strengthen the support by the department together with its entities, including the water boards, to municipalities. And we also want to strengthen our interventions in municipalities where there is non-compliance with national norms and standards. But we will do this in such a way that we respect the local government water services constitutional mandate. We also think that the work needs to be done on the fiscal framework for water and sanitation so that it reflects the need for national and provincial intervention where there's municipal failure with regard to water and sanitation services. In other words, there must be fiscal mechanisms which enable national and provincial intervention to be financed when it is required. Notwithstanding that, The principle that water and sanitation services should be self-sustaining should be borne in mind, and the principle that all the institutions in the sector should be similarly financially self-sustaining, apart from free basic services to the indigent. So in other words, the fiscal model for the water and sanitation sector is that people should pay for water and sanitation services if they can afford to do so, and that revenue should be used to fund the maintenance and rehabilitation and development of water and sanitation infrastructure. In our assessment, the interventions in the past with regard to failures of municipal sanitation and water services have not been sufficiently effective. And short-term interventions, such as appointing an administrator for 6 months, have not been effective in addressing the failures. So, for example, in Makana in the Eastern Cape, there's been a series of interventions where an administrator was appointed for 6 months, but that has not stopped the water and sanitation services from deteriorating. While constitutionally it's not possible for national or provincial government to take over municipal water and sanitation functions permanently, there is nothing in the current legal framework prohibiting the minister from directing the water boards or other agencies to provide longer-term support and interventions to municipalities after consultation with the municipality. So, for example, in our view, it could be legally possible for longer-term interventions to be done in cases where longer-term interventions would be more effective, such as, for example, in the management of wastewater treatment works, where there could be an intervention which would involve taking over the management of a wastewater treatment works where the municipality clearly doesn't have the capacity to manage it well and it's repeatedly not meeting norms and standards and is polluting the environment or resulting in spillages into people's homes. It could be feasible to provide support in terms of supporting the municipality with management of the wastewater treatment works for a much longer period of 10 or 20 years. And such longer periods of support to municipalities where they are failing would also enable private sector participation because contracts could be put in place where the private sector could invest in the rehabilitation of the wastewater treatment works and then get a return from revenues from wastewater treatment works to pay off that investment over a longer term. So in that context, honourable members, what we are planning to do is to work together with SALGA, National Treasury and COGTA, and in consultation with organisations of private sector investors, to lead the development and implementation of a range of interrelated and coordinated support measures and interventions, all aimed at making supported interventions to municipalities for water and sanitation services more effective. Firstly, we want to strengthen and extend the roles, responsibilities and capacity of the water boards so that they're able to provide water and sanitation services in instances where municipalities are failing to provide the services. Secondly, we want to review the geographical boundaries of the water boards to make them more sustainable, and that has already started with the disestablishment of Sedibeng Water. Thirdly, we want to increase the involvement of private sector financing and management in municipal water and sanitation services so that we can draw on the capital and the management skills which are available in the private sector to augment what is available in the public sector. Fourthly, we want to strengthen our regulatory interventions based on the results of monitoring mechanisms such as the blue drop and green drop and no drop. Fifthly, we want to strengthen the national norms and standards for water and sanitation services that we issue in terms of the Water Services Act and make them more comprehensive and make them cover more areas such as minimum experience and qualifications, for example, for wastewater treatment plant managers, and to put in place a framework to guide the provision of sanitation services. We also want to introduce longer-term interventions, as I've mentioned, such as, for example, taking over the management of wastewater treatment works for municipalities for a longer prescribed period where there is continued non-compliance with norms and standards. We also want to more effectively link the allocation of municipal water and sanitation grants to enable and support our interventions and our support to municipalities. And we have an internal DWS construction unit which has considerable capacity, which is relatively inefficient. We want to improve the efficiency of that construction unit and make it better able to be available for rapid deployment to address urgent interventions at municipal level, in addition to doing the work that it's currently doing in terms of construction of major natural water resource infrastructure. We also want to, as I mentioned, work together with National Treasury to ensure that appropriate financing frameworks and mechanisms for support and interventions are in place. And then we need to make sure that there's better coordination and linkages between all the different types of interventions which are made in terms of different sections of the various legislation. So, honourable members, we plan within 3 months to put in place a framework document which will describe in more detail how all these different interrelated and coordinated support measures will work and under what circumstances we will deploy the different tools in our toolbox to support municipalities and to intervene. So those tools, as I've mentioned, include our provincial offices, the water boards, our construction units, and the capacity and finance which is there in the private sector. And we plan to put together a framework to indicate how all of these are going to be deployed to achieve more effective support and intervention in municipalities. But on the other hand, we're not waiting for that framework to be in place before we engage and support an intervention. We are already, as honourable members will be aware, we are already using our water boards, for example, to intervene in some situations. For example, Rand Waters has currently been mandated to intervene in Emfuleni municipality on our behalf to address the problem of the poorly maintained and overloaded wastewater treatment plants and sewage pipe leakages in that area, which is resulting in both contamination of the environment and sewage leakages into people's homes. So we will simultaneously continue with support to municipalities and with interventions, and at the same time develop this framework for how we can strengthen and increase that support over time and make better use of the tools at our disposal to do that. That brings me to the end of the first part of the presentation. The second part of the presentation focuses on water use licenses and what we're doing to improve the turnaround time for water use license applications, which was the second issue talked about in the SONA by the President. And Leonardo Manos will make this part of the presentation.
Good morning, everyone, honourable members, honourable Chair, Minister and Deputy Ministers. I will just go straight into the background of it, and that is that we in 2017 we had the regulations promulgated that stipulated that water use licenses should be completed within 300 days, but subsequent to that the President has declared that we will complete it within 90 days, and because of the fact that that's been identified that delayed water use license processing has been a stumbling block to economic development, but this announcement had a significant reduction in the number of days that would be allowed for the completion of water use licenses, a reduction by 210 days, and the department had to take the decision or the process, commence the process to reconfigure its business processes to actually adhere to this reduction in time. The implementation of the 90 days commenced in April 2021. But as we know, in terms of the background, legislative background, in terms of water use licenses as to why it's necessary to do it this way, is to keep in mind that we have to adhere to the constitutional rights of everyone to have access to water, and sufficient water for that matter. And that is the reason why the National Water Act has given effect to that, to say that we need to ensure that the nation's water resources are protected, used and developed and conserved, managed and controlled in ways which take into account these following steps as stipulated there. It's also reflected in Section 21 of the National Water Act, where it provides the various uses of the that needs to be taken into consideration. It's not only abstraction, it's also the discharges of water that contain perhaps pollutants that's going into our water. It's also storage, it's altering of the banks. Then it's all types of uses that could have an effect on our water resources that need to be authorized for license. And Section 22 gives the types of authorizations they have to go through, and then from Section 27 it gives what needs to be considered within the licenses and the license applications process in Section 40. So Section 26 also empowers the Minister to make regulations to prescribe procedural requirements for license applications. As we just expressed, that there was one promulgated in 2017, and this was in line with the timeframes for the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, which then they and the NEMA, which is the National Environmental Management Act, and that's where the 300 days came from. Now, with the announcement of the 90 days, it requires then for new regulations to be effective, and the draft regulations were completed and will be taken through the internal process for internal consultation in this quarter of the financial year, and it's to be then published for public comment in the first quarter and to be finalized in September. So the process of water use authorization is highly scientific, and it's a technical process to follow. If we don't give due time to the process and we do the right thing in terms of the scientific allocation or considerations that we have to go through when we do the authorization, we could open ourselves up to litigation from applicants or third parties who might object to the decision that the department has taken with regards to a water license. So the input in the process of completion of these includes also technical reports by the applicants for consideration. Department specialists will then look into these inputs that have been provided and then make their own inputs into the report for consideration by those who are then making the final decision. And then steps towards the performance improvement and to take into account all of these factors to ensure that we don't compromise on the quality of the water use authorizations, applications, or processing thereof. So the process that has to go through, honorable members, would be that the assessor, that she will look at the application and receive all the documents and forms, and then identify inputs where it's required from the specialist on various issues for them to also then make input, and this has been then sent to the specialist, which will go through the report of recommendation from the assessor and then make his or her input then on that specific point that would be of engineering nature, geohydrology, or water quality, of whatever specialist in a type of input is required. It's then sent back to the assessor to amend the record of recommendations should it be required, and then be sent to the supervisor for quality control and checking. Then we have a committee, which is then the Water Use Authorization Application Advisory Committee, which comprises of various specialists or expertise, and then to be given to the delegated authority for recommendation, which would either be the regional director or the proto-CMA or the CMA-CE, or for the more specialist, then the chief director, Water Use License Management in the National Office, would then make the final decision. The difference between the previous process in terms of the 300 days that was originally allocated for the process of the water use license application, which was 300 days, and to the 90 days would be in the first step itself, is that the department had to take a decision that it cannot receive incomplete applications. Because what would have happened, and it has happened in the recent past, and that is the reason why it has changed, is that when the department sends back an application because it doesn't have all the information for the technical considerations to be taken, that the applicant regard that time as part of the time spent by the department on a specific application. And that's the reason why the day zero starts when all the information is then received by the department and then it goes into the process. Now, the time frames are much tighter. And we had to make a consideration into taking consideration that in the assessor, who is actually very key in this process, has a lot of different entities, elements, and specialist individuals to consult on specific elements of a water use license as depicted in this slide, which range from geohydrology, civil engineering, the planning information, and as well as perhaps other entities outside of the department, like the Department of Environmental Affairs, Water Use Association, and other interested affected parties. So there was a need to ensure performance, because continuing as we've done it before with a new target date would not have resulted in anything positive. And that is why the department has initiated the process of improving the efficiency in the authorization of water use, with particular focus on ensuring that the time frame is being met. And that is where we then received assistance from the presidency in form of Operation Vulindlela to actually get an improvement plan in place for the water use license application process. And this improvement plan was the project that went ahead to draft this improvement plan at two phases. The first phase was to diagnose all the areas of weaknesses and risks in meeting the 90 days. And this commenced in February 2021 and was completed in June 2021. And it employed going through the entire process of those who are currently involved, as well as applicants and external stakeholders that went through the process before, to actually identify what the weaknesses have been. And this was then conducted and concluded. And phase two was then to conceptualize and plan, taking consideration what happened in phase one, and to come up with a whole project management approach to actually find solutions for all the weaknesses that, or interventions for all the weaknesses that were identified. This is a rendergram that I identified. I won't go through all the cells, but the honorable members, you will identify there all the things that have been identified through this process of phase one of the Vulindlela process to identify what is wrong in the department as far as this process is concerned. But I will go into this slide where it gave order, and it gave order to the what was found, the root causes into the findings. We've established then three work streams. The work stream one, which was to optimize the technology that we have in terms of the EULAS, our electronic system for water use license applications, to actually improve that component of the business and that we can use it more optimally. Then obviously in the process itself, in terms of how that was work stream two, to how then we can streamline the applications and get uniformity. And with the misalignments was addressed in that one as well. And then work stream three was the capacity that we have in terms of how to address the capacity that we have in terms of the insufficiency that we might have in terms of staff numbers, in terms of the technical skills, in terms of the training that we need to get in as well. And then to get the correct structure in place for us to make it more programmatic. Because addressing a water use license into 90 days shouldn't be a project, but it should be institutionalized into the department. And work stream three was addressing that component of it. Now, just to give a quick feedback in terms of what we have done thus far in terms of this work stream, as the honorable members can note on this slide 24, we speak of the insufficient staff numbers. There was significant work that had to be done to ensure that we develop a structure and we determine the staff numbers and so forth, and sourcing of funds. And as you can see, that the majority of this work has already been finalized and done. We are just in the process in terms of the structure and the progress also with the ring fencing of the function, because of the fact is that we have staff that's working in multi disciplines, and that is something that we are still to address as well. In terms of work stream two, where we are working in terms of the process that we have to also improve the lack of skills, the standardization of requirements and the license conditions not being implementable, identified as areas of risk. The interventions have been identified, and as you can see in this slide as well, that we finalized at this point at least three of the five issues or the six issues that we are busy in as far as this process is concerned here as well. In terms of the remainder of work stream two, that we sometimes didn't differentiate, or most of the time there was no differentiation between what was an easier water use application and that was more complex. Both went through the same process. So we now had to develop a different processes for the complex and less complex applications. That was already that process completed there. And we're now in the process of developing a new process, which is supposed to be completed now by the end of this financial year. This month. And then the lack of a tool to assist assessors in this decision-making process. We developed the decision-making tool, and the guidelines have been developed, and now the testing work will be completed in March 2022. 80% of this work stream's work have been completed up to date. And in work stream three, in terms of the electronic system that we are working on, we have been working on the development of a performance monitoring and escalation system to ensure that cases don't get missing or go in stagnant phase in the system. That PMES, which is the performance monitoring and escalation system, has been finalized. And then also in terms of the rollout of the EULAS has also been done in terms of the training, and now the training of the regional heads and the EULAS on the EULAS system is in progress, and we're also continuing in that. In work streams 3 also, as it continues, we are now also reducing the downtime of the system to improve the connectivity that they must the problems that the public had in terms of connecting to the system, in terms of the bandwidth that was in the on the system that we use, and we are working on that one as well. And then coming to the point in terms of the progress that we have now in terms of the water use licenses that are in place, up until this point in time, since the 1st of April until the 1st of February of this month, we finalized 1,327 water use licenses, of which 756 of them have been completed but were outside of the prescribed time limit, and 571 of them have been within the prescribed time limit. What we have currently in hand would be 998 water use licenses that still need to be completed and finalized, and this is quite a significant number that's still in hand, but it compares also, as can be noted by the members, honourable members should note that 1,327 has been completed. So, I think I will skip this slide as it gives just an indication. I want to come to this slide that actually proved to say that 57% of all the water use licenses received as from the 1st of April were completed and processed and finalized, but there's some work still to be done. This is a notification that in the Western Cape, we received about 22% or 23% of all applications that received in the country has come from this province. And then in KZN would be the second highest. This is just a performance barometer in terms of the various provinces or proto CMAs as far as they are performing as far as it's concerned, but keeping in mind that the numbers in terms of what it's been doing is also reflected on the left-hand side for your consumption. So what are we doing in terms of fast-tracking applications in the process is that we have set ourselves a very strict target, which is the 30th of June to finalize all 998 that is currently in process, so that we want to start afresh as from the second quarter to start working on more current water use license applications that are in hand then in the department. This will be implemented that we actually get our work sessions with all our officials that were involved with water use license processes so that we can get them to be dedicated to this process. Among the factors that we have identified that could be critical over this period until June would be that limited time work spent really on the processing of applications need to be reviewed, because as per the current work load of our staff, that some of them only spend 7 days a month on water use licenses, and this will be reviewed or doubled to at least 14 days a month. And then we also have to get our committee that's making the recommendations to have higher frequency meetings to ensure that these licenses are processed a little bit faster. The work sessions will take form in terms of where the national office provinces where we are found to be at higher risk of not making that target, which is Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Northern Cape. And then we have a good feeling about Eastern Cape, Free State, and the two CMAs. If they proceed as normal, they should make their target, but at least a little bit of increase in pace would be required from the housing, as depicted in this slide, where it's more clearer, where you can see that the levels of confidence in terms of making the target is in terms of the color configuration. That is the reason why the National Office staff has been mobilized also to assist as far as the three high-risk areas are concerned. Just in terms of the water set-aside for HDI uptake, the historically disadvantaged, we have set aside 20,088 hectares of land or water, rather. Not land, water, irrigation water to irrigate 20,000 hectares have been set aside, of which 59% in terms of 13,700 has already been allocated as given on this table. And we've recently also been working in the Brandvlei area where we've identified additional water in that system, which will increase in this figure. And as we continue with our optimization in the various catchments, this figure will be increased as well in terms of the set aside to increase also the allocation to our historically disadvantaged. In terms of all the number of licenses that were granted, up to date it would be 8,194 licenses that have been granted. Of this, 667 has been allocated to black companies or corporates, and then 3,728 has been given to white-owned companies that have the BBBEE compliance status or partnered with HDIs, and then local government and state-owned entities receive 16% of the licenses. Historically advantaged individuals were 674, which is 8%, and historically disadvantaged individuals received 1,782 voter licenses that have been granted in that regard. What we have found that we have to do is that we need to improve our communications and to ensure that applicants are not becoming frustrated due to no reporting that comes back, and therefore we've identified that there is a problem that sometimes the applicants work through an appointed representative and the communication between the two of them might be not as good, and therefore there need to be more correspondence that we have to improve in this regard, because we have found that the shortcomings is that the representative of the applicants do not always provide information to the applicant which is right, or misrepresent issues when they do not comply with the department's requirements, and the department does not provide updates, especially when they have delayed processing. So noting these shortcomings, we have now structured quarterly meetings led by the Chief Directorate Water Use License Management with the applicants and their organizations to submit submit these applications or in the higher volumes, so that the quarterly progress meetings can be given on this regard, and to increase the number of organizations also have that we have these meetings with. And then we will also send letters at the 45-day milestone just to give a progress in terms of where we stand. The conclusion from the water use license component would be that there's significant progress that has been made at this point in time to address the processing of water use licenses, and that we will work towards that end of June to have a new reality as far as the water use license is concerned as from the second quarter of this financial year. And I thank you, and I give over to the DJ again. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next item that the President talked about is the establishment of the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. The main rationale for establishing the agency is a financial rationale. The country does require ongoing and sustained mega water resource infrastructure in order to effectively operate and in addition to effectively operating and maintaining existing assets. There's a need for us to invest heavily in additional national water resource infrastructure if we're going to meet the water requirements of a growing economy in the decades to come. However, due to fiscal constraints, we can't rely on significant fiscal support to develop that required infrastructure. And the main rationale for establishing of the NWRIA will be that that agency will be in a better position than the department to raise funds from sources other than the fiscus. And I'll explain that a little bit more. So the intention is to take the assets which are currently in the department and put them in the agency so that the agency has a substantial balance sheet, and to merge the NWRIA, the asset management part of the department, and the TCTA into a new agency called the NWRIA, which would have, which would be the owner of the national water resource assets and would have them on its balance sheet and be able to leverage that balance sheet to raise finance for addition or investment in the additional large-scale water resource infrastructure required. This is better than the current model, which is used by the TCPA, which only raises finance back on the basis of offtake agreements that it can enter into and based on explicit government guarantees. And currently, the TCTA is constrained in terms of the amount of finance that it can raise because the government itself has constraints in terms of additional guarantees that it can give. So the DCTA currently is not able to raise sufficient loan financing to fund the construction of the scale of additional infrastructure which is required. But by creating the NWRIA, with the assets, with a substantial balance sheet, and once it can develop a good credit rating, it will be able to raise substantially more money using its balance sheet. Additional rationale for establishing the NWRIA includes that it will strengthen governance and transparency in the water sector by separating the roles of player and referee. That is, DWS will retain responsibility for planning, regulation, policy and price setting, whilst the NWRIA will finance, build, operate and maintain the water resource assets. In addition, creation of the NWRIA will reduce the current fragmentation in the sector, in that fragmentation is that we have the TCTA, we have the asset management section in the department, and we have the water trading entity. So we have three separate entities, in a sense, which are fragmented, and there are clear benefits from putting those three entities into one entity, the NWRIA. This slide just gives an indication of the water assets and the current related tariff income. The current value of our water resource infrastructure is in the order of 93 billion rand. But the TCTA is only implementing four projects worth 68 billion currently, using the methods that it uses to raise finance. But by leveraging that substantial balance sheet, the assets that we have, we estimate that we could raise three times more finance than the TCTA is currently able to raise. So the mandate and functions of the NWRIA will be firstly to implement water resource management infrastructure as identified in water resources planning processes within DWS. So DWS will retain responsibility for planning and for identifying what infrastructure is required. And then the NWRIA will raise the finance and implement. It will also be responsible for managing the existing water resource infrastructure and for maintaining and rehabilitating it, and for collecting revenue from the sale of water as its primary source of income. It will also develop options to increase sources of revenue and raise commercial funding on the strength of its balance sheet, and also engage in various forms of public-private partnerships. Where are we at the moment with the establishment of the NWRIA? The draft bill is being reviewed and updated, and the business case for the agency has been developed. We plan to run two separate but parallel processes for finalization of the bill into an act and for finalization of the detailed business plan for the establishment of the NWRIA. The draft business plan has been developed and submitted to National Treasury as is required for the establishment of all new public entities. The business plan requires the sign-off of both the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Water and Sanitation. And our intention is to finalize the business plan for approval by the Minister of Finance near the end of the legislative process, just before the bill becomes an act. So in case there's any changes to the bill in Parliament, we can then incorporate those in the final business plan, which is submitted to the Minister of Finance. In the meantime, though, we have submitted the draft business plan to National Treasury. We've received comments from them, and they are being incorporated. The comments don't question the creation of the NWRIA. They are less major issues which we are currently addressing. We have the socio-economic impact assessment, which has been signed off by the presidency. So that's one box that we've ticked, which needs to be ticked before we can submit to the cluster. There's a couple of other boxes that we need to tick, which we're currently engaging in, and that involves consulting with key departments and affected entities, including the TCTA and others, as well as organized labor in the departments and the affected entities. And we plan to finish those other processes and submit to the cluster, and after that to Cabinet, with the target date of submitting to the cluster by the end of March. And the recommendation to the cluster and to Cabinet will be that the Cabinet approves that the bill be submitted to Parliament, that the bill be gazetted for public comment. The next issue, which was talked about by the President in the SONA, is the issue of improving regulation in the sector. And here we're going to focus particularly on our reinstatement of the Green Drop and Blue Drop certification programs. And Leonardo will also present on this section.
Thank you once more. In terms of the incentive-based regulation that we've established here, it is designed to seek and to induce change of behavior of individuals who are responsible for drinking water quality and its wastewater quality. And that followed, actually, the way concept came from was that in 2007, there were tragedies in the town of Delmas when 5 people had passed because, unfortunately, due to the fact that there wasn't a good quality that was drinking water at that point in time. And in Jokabi, there was also an outbreak of diarrhea in 2007. And this necessitated a new approach that was more proactive instead of the current legislative processes that were more reactive. So the incentive-based regulation was conceptualized in form of a blue drop and the green drop, one for the drinking water and the other for the wastewater quality. So there was a direct link between wastewater and drinking water quality management that failed in both cases of Delmas and Dokabi. And these certification programs were pioneered in the South African water sector since 2008 as the first form of incentive-based regulation in the space of water services and water resources. And at the time when the department was part of the regulators network of the World Health Organization, between 2009 and 2012, these projects or these regulatory programs were peer-reviewed by various countries that participated in the regulators network. So the first Blue Drop report was issued in 2009 and the Green Drop in 2010. And then also to then mention that incentive-based regulation is not a weaker form of regulation, but rather an alternative, because it has the objective not to react to non-compliance, but to identify the risk that could cause you to be non-compliant, and then to put in control measures to prevent the failure. Thus meaning that if we have a higher performance in the blue drop and the green drop, that it will then mean that there's a lower likelihood of failure in quality. And then another objective would be to seek renewed focus on improvement in performance, compliance, and efficiency, and to set high standards beyond what would normally be expected, and to use international best practice and national norms and standards and innovation to also then form part of these standards, and to provide professional recognition for excellence. Now, the water service institutions are compelled to provide, they don't have the option to participate, but they are compelled to provide information in terms of the Water Services Act, Section 82D, that and E and F that prescribes this. And then also that these two programs complement one another, because in the broader framework of the safe drinking water that we drink, that wastewater treatment is the first barrier in a multi-barrier process of ensuring safe drinking water. And that's the reason why the two goes hand in hand. Now, the last report was issued the Green Drop report was issued in 2013 and the Blue Drop in 2014. We relaunched these programs in June 2021. And this also followed after various sector engagements when municipal officials, even responsible for water quality management, called for the return of these programs, since it was the belief that it creates an enabling environment for competent staff to ensure performance with a set expectation. So there was more or less a quasi type of competition set as far amongst these peers. Now, in terms of the Blue Drop certification, we look at these 5 steps.
and or the five categories, which would be the capacity management, the drinking water quality risk management, the financial management, the technical management, and the quality compliance. And then you can see under each category what the department look at to actually do the or the audits on. Not all of these five steps are equally weighted. Obviously, number five is higher weighted at the 35%, because if you don't get the quality right, then nothing is right. But just to mention that the water safety planning, that South Africa was one of the first countries that started regulating the concept of water safety planning, which was developed by the World Health Organization in 2004, after a tragic failure in Walkerton, in town of Walkerton, in 2000, when water quality causes the death of many people there. As far as the green drop certification, I'm sorry, the same principles apply, but in this regard, the wastewater risk abatement planning, which is a concept that was designed and conceptualized within the department and in South Africa, is a first to bring in the risk management component into the wastewater as well. Once again, not equal weighting, slightly different to the blue drop, but they're more or less the same categories. In terms of the yardstick that we require in between years, because the department will do a full green drop report in the 1 year and a progress report in blue drop and a full blue drop report the other year and then a progress report in green drop, we use the concept of cumulative risk rating, which considers the design of the wastewater treatment works, the average flow into the wastewater treatment works, as well as the compliance in terms of quality and the skills over that period of year, to determine a risk rating, which will then be used as a yardstick to measure trends as we go to continue between the years. So the way forward would be that the Green Drop report will be released in March next month, at the end of next month, for all 995 wastewater treatment works audited, and we will have a strong focus in terms of restoring functionality of wastewater treatment facilities in terms of guiding that step. And the Blue Drop report, or progress report for that matter, will cover all 1,248 water supply systems in the country in terms of the CRR yardstick that I've just explained. So thank you, Honorable Chair. I will just hand back to the DG.
Thank you very much, Leonardo. The final issue that was talked about by the President and the SONA is the Mzumbubu project, which is going to be presented by Acting DDG Mokibeli Moshoti.
Morning, everybody. Morning, Minister, honourable members. So the presentation today provides an overall view of the implementation of the Mzumbubu Water Project and highlights of stage one of the advanced infrastructure implementation. Just a brief background, the Mzumbubu River catchment in South Africa, in Eastern Cape, is one of the poorest and least developed regions of the country. And then the department, with a view of accelerating the socioeconomic upliftment of that area, it identified this project as one of the priority initiatives for the Eastern Cape provincial government. It's also a strategic integrated project, the three, and it appears in the National Development Plan. And the project entails a multi-purpose conjunctive scheme comprising of two dams as well as pertinent infrastructure on the Theta River in the Mzumbubu catchment. We commissioned a feasibility study in 2012 with an aim of, amongst others, regional economic stimulation through irrigation, forestry, and hydropower generation, in addition to supplying potable water to an approximate number of 720,000 people by 2050, and then raw water distribution for just under 3,000 hectares of high-yielding agricultural land. And the Minister of Water and Sanitation approved this project in 2016 in May as a government water works in terms of Section 109 of the National Water Act. This is just a graphical representation of where the dams are in Eastern Cape. The Ntabelanga Dam would be in between McClear and Mount Frey. And then further down the river is Lalini Dam at the Tisa Falls. The project scope in terms of phasing can be summarized as four stages. Stage one involves the construction of advanced infrastructure, which is basically the roads to the dam site where the anticipated laborers will be able to be placed, as well as operational staff once the scheme is operational. Stage two includes then the construction of Ntabelanga Dam and a water treatment plant to supply the potable water. We anticipating that the dam would be 490 million cubes and would then be one of the highest dams at 58 meters in the country. Stage three would involve the construction of bulk water distribution pipe network and pump stations and command reservoirs, and it constitutes a significant percentage of this project to realize the full cost, in fact, the full social impact, because, you know, without the distribution infrastructure, it would just be dams that eventually don't supply water to people. Stage four involves the construction of a water, of a hydroelectric power plant, and then a dam to deal with flow stabilization. The dam would be around 53 meters and would be able to supply about 37 megawatts of hydropower electricity. Due to funding constraints, the project was implemented as indicated with stage one, which is the access road, because it was manageable with limited funding. The then portions which would be left out would be stage two to four. But we then went out on tender to get a service provider to design all of the components from stage one to stage four. We then ran into some disputes after appointing the service provider in 2014. We signed an SLA with them in 2015. And as I said before, their scope included the detailed design, site supervision and quality control of all of the stages of the Mzinzibu Water project. The stage two to stage four are still at design stage, with most of the works packages complete, but not at a stage that we could go out to tender. So there's still some essential signatures and authorizations that are needed for the information to be utilized by the department. This is because we ran into a dispute regarding payment with the service provider. We went into arbitration, and this arbitration was concluded in 2019. And in line with the arbitration decision, the department and the PSP, we agreed to terminate the contract amicably through the intervention of the Engineering Council of South Africa to review the work done, and whoever owes the other party money will then implement that. And the aim is that the full design package is completed and usable, and then the contract will be served. From the onset, the department had estimated that this project would cost about 14 billion rand. And in 2017, once the design packages were coming to completion, the minister directed TCTA to raise all of the funding and implement the entire Zimbabwe Water project, including overseeing the construction of the project. The TCTA found it difficult to raise this funding because the necessary offtake agreements were not available. So there aren't enough commercial interest in the commercial users rather in the area to raise the funding required on a commercial basis, which is the operating model of TCTA. And with this difficulty, the minister then established a Zimbubu project task team with the aim of refocusing the project with a new implementation model to try and get funding from the fiscus rather than the market. And TCTA was then left to do project management only instead of raising funds on phase one of the project, and they're currently doing that. With that decision, the department has not been successful in motivating for the funding required for the whole project from the fiscus. Various funding applications were not approved by the Department of Finance. Because of this, we're therefore pursuing alternative sources of finance to complement the limited funding available from the fiscus. And to date, we've advertised a request for information to the market to see if there are interested parties that could make alternative funding proposals for funding of the whole project or aspects of the project. It did close last week on the 14th. We are still assessing the information that we've received. But should we not get a favorable response from the market, we'll inform National Treasury that we cannot proceed with the project because we've hit a brick wall in terms of the external funding. And we would only be able to proceed if funding is available from the fiscus. In the meantime, we've been provided with a budget from the fiscus to implement stage one, as I've said, which is the access roads to the proposed Ntabelanga Dam. It does serve a much needed social purpose because there's no appropriate road infrastructure in the area. With that said, thank you very much, Chairperson. DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That brings us to the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. Good speed, and I think we can make up the time. The pace is fine. May I ask, does it mean that the Deputy Minister, we cannot get into the engagement of the document? There's nothing I'm going to say?
From my side, I think, Chair and Minister, we should allow the committee to engage the ministry and department.
Okay. That's the view of the executive. Let's get into that. Okay. Is that the case? Can I get hands of comrades that want to speak on it?
Chairperson, maybe you can't see these three hands up at the moment.
Okay. Leon? Sorry, Leon, you can continue.
No, I'm just saying to the chairperson, there's three hands up. It's Member Hendricks, Mutlala, and myself.
And myself too, Honorable Chair.
Let's talk in that sequence.
And my chair and my.
Yes, I hear you. It is Hendricks, Mutlala, Leon, and yourself.
And Eki.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I want to know from the Minister and the Department if they considered the principle of zero-based budgeting as approved by Treasury and discussed with the Minister of Finance with party leaders, whether the Department and the Minister is embracing zero-based budgeting. And obviously the idea is that every South African should open a tap and have drinking water. At the moment, it appears that there is a piecemeal approach. Secondly, Honorable Chair, the department seems to be a lame duck because even in a drought situation in the Eastern Cape, it doesn't make the cut to address the water shortages in the Eastern Cape. I saw that when we went on our one-week tour of the Eastern Cape with a portfolio committee, and all the places that we visited is in a drought situation, underfunding, not enough resources, even with presidential intervention and SAGA grants. So if you can't make the cut in a drought situation in the Eastern Cape, you know, they were the first to duck the bullets in the trenches, but the last to receive water for all the citizens. So that is one of the concerns I want to raise. I was at the Ubuntu Awards, and I spoke to some corporate people who got awards, and they raised concerns that the tap water in East London is poisonous. So that comes from the corporate world. And, you know, so it looks like we have a very dysfunctional department, but I must say the reports are very rosy. The summit provides a lot of encouragement that happened. But we're meeting with the Minister of Finance in the next hour, and we're going to tell him, you know, that they are the treasuries, of course, that people are going to die of thirst. People talk about day zero, but I'm going to the east to Uitenhage and Kariga over the weekend because people are dying there of thirst or dying a slow death, and I want to send the names to the Minister of people affected and how life-threatening the absence of water is. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks so much, Chairperson. Sorry, man, I'm not going to be able to switch my video. I've been driving. Chairperson, firstly, I'm going to raise general points about the presentation. Chair, are you speaking? Can I move on, Chair? Okay.
Yes,
I think the Chair was speaking. Mm. Yes. Chair?
No, it is you, Member Mhlala, it is you speaking.
Yes, I'm saying I'm sorry, I will not be able to put my video on. I apologize for that. So, Chairperson, I'm going to raise general points about the presentation from the DG and the department. Chairperson, I'm unsure who in the department provides information to the Office of the Presidency on the water and sanitation sector to be incorporated into his State of the Nation address. However, what is clear is that the President's pronouncements are a mere copy and paste of previous SONA statements. Understandably, the President can't outline how the department intends to undertake those imperatives. But I would have liked to have seen the department provide a paragraph or two to the Office of the Presidency on what the department attained in addressing challenges in water use allocation as determined in the 2021 State of the Nation Address. The SONA for the water and sanitation sector to the ordinary citizen appears to be a wish list, a new wish list, and yet the department has already implemented the turnaround strategies. Why place so much emphasis on work that has already been attained? If your input to the Office of the President emphasizes how the 2021 SONA and how it would further be sustained in a short statement is being achieved, it would have been far more powerful message to the people of South Africa, to the people of South Africa. Similarly, with the establishment of the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency, improvement of water boards, and Umzimvubu Water Project, These to-do lists have been articulated over the last 10 years, but minimal context is provided on why previous attempts to attain imperatives have not yet achieved. I fully understand that the SONA merely provides a blueprint and the department undertakes the details on each. Repeating a wish list by the president year by year does not reflect the citizens' understanding that the initiative outlines are not novel or new. Chairperson, a second general issue that I found difficult to understand, not only in this presentation, but after watching the National Water and Sanitation Summit on social media, as some of us were excluded from attending this summit this last week, is the deafening silence on how systematic mismanagement, corruption and misconduct in the department has hindered the work of the department. Fair enough, the department and the SIU are addressing the complexities to attain workable solution. Still, I think that if the risk associated with these issues do not form the foundation or mainstay of presentations or summit, then the value of your targets are diminished, as there will be a constant reactionary or crisis mode that the department operates on, which it has done in the past. I hope that excluding opposition members from summit dialogues or policy input does not become the norm by the Department of Water and Sanitation. It gives a poor reflection of dysfunctionality of the work of the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation, of legislators' mandate in holding the executive into account. Furthermore, the department can be accused of violating the constitutional mandate of all legislatures across party lines to keep the executive accountable. Chairperson, we have seen too much of this in the past. It was critically highlighted during the Zondo Commission on how influential the executive is in determining the agenda of the work of committees via political structures. Chairperson, point number three. Today's presentation and the National Water and Sanitation Summit talk extensively on investment in built infrastructure by the private and public sectors. But once again, of critical importance was how to protect your built infrastructure. If no heed is given to investment in environmental or ecological infrastructure, policymakers in general outside of the environmental sector use the concept of the blue and green economy quite loosely. Still today, the terminology has not seeped into consciousness and reality of policymakers and decision makers. Instead, policymakers within the water and sanitation sector are quite comfortable building bulk infrastructure. I do not dispute the importance of this initiative, but what is concerning is that this department has made no serious attempt to work with institutions such as SANBI or the Department of Environmental Affairs on understanding how protecting ecological infrastructure provides opportunities to support the development and unlock economic potential, and most importantly, in rehabilitating wetlands and land use degradations, which will assist with increasing fresh water supplies, climate regulations, and disaster risk mitigation, which will be assisted by ensuring healthy, well-maintained ecological infrastructure. Ecological infrastructure is mainly accessible, but because its value is seldom captured in market transactions, it tends to underinvest in it. Why do I think this is essential that the Department of Water and Sanitation, together with the Department of Environmental Affairs, invest more in ecological infrastructure? The answers are just simple, Chairperson. Strategic investment in ecological infrastructure lengthens the life of existing built infrastructure. For example, degraded ecological infrastructure often leads to reduced capacity and lifespan of dams, increasing their maintenance costs. It also creates the cost of flooding. It is unusually more cost-effective to restore the ecosystems concerned than repair or replace the built infrastructure. Point number two, ecological infrastructure help us cope with climate change. Well-managed ecological infrastructure can buffer the impact of disasters. Point three, Chairperson, investing in ecological infrastructure creates jobs. Enhancing the green economy is not the sole purview of the Department of Environmental Affairs. The Green Jobs Report in 2011 by the Industrial Development Corporation and the Development Bank of South Africa noted that the bulk of the jobs related to the green economy is likely to come from natural resource management, for example, renewable energy generation or technologies. I want to appeal to the Department of Water and Sanitation to analyze this input further and provide the Portfolio Committee with strategies on how collaborative work with the Department of Environmental Affairs on investment in ecological infrastructure can vastly improve our limited water resources and provide a natural buffer to protect the built infrastructure. Chairperson, let me go straight to your presentation now. On page 6 of your presentation,
I was saying we have allowed her to speak outside the presentation, and I know she knows that she was out of order, but it's okay. Let's continue.
She was only speaking. Chair, at some point you must
Yes.
At some point, you must allocate minutes to members of parliament, because all of us are going to raise some debates in this meeting, Chair. Because to me, what Honorable Motlhala is doing is starting to debate on the State of Nation address, which has passed. So unfortunately, Chair, you did not give us time frames or minutes to raise our own issues.
Also, just if you have to speak to those that she said, let's do that, because I don't want to police what to say, but it must be rebuffed when we come, because she is not necessarily correct what she's saying, but let's allow her to continue.
No, but Chairperson, you can't say I'm not necessarily correct.
No, continue.
You can't say those things.
I am saying it.
I agree with that, Mr. Chairman. You are out of order. How can you say that?
No,
that is ridiculous. Please, be impartial and allow the EFF to share with the nation the crisis that we have with water. It's completely unacceptable for members to interrupt the EFF speaker. It's the most interesting speech I've ever heard in my life.
It is even acceptable for you to interrupt me speaking. So
it is raising a point of order. Let me proceed, Chairperson. On page 6 of your of the presentation, it is impressive that your presentation begins with contextualizing the constitutional and legislative imperatives that underpin the work of the department and its relation to water boards, vis-a-vis the municipalities. But which component of the governmental department or units are seriously addressing the challenges in implementing Schedule 4 of the Constitution, which indicates that municipal water and sanitation services are a functional concurrent legislative competence. However, sitting in this committee over time, the implementation of concurrent function within the department, within the water and sanitation sector, has been particularly weak, which has resulted in yet another attempt to improve further the intergovernmental relations framework through the development of the district development model. Some members of this committee have repeatedly asked for the report presented to the president on a case study that utilizes the district development model to date, and no information has been forthcoming. Secondly, Chairperson, is the Department of Water, is the Department of the Water Research Commission, or TCTA, undertaking a systematic analytical study on the disconnect between implementation of the Municipal Structures Act and the Water Services Act, which is quite clear on roles and responsibilities, can become mired in tensions and controversy? How will the department, through the district development model and other initiatives, support municipalities to build sufficient economics of scale to be efficient and financially resourced to employ skilled managers, professional staff, and to raise enough capital funds for investment in essential water infrastructure, specifically for operations and maintenance, and find solutions for areas which less developed economies? The department talks of public-private partnership and investment for national bulk infrastructure project, but could they also scale this local government level so that there is the ability to improve water and sanitation services at a local government level? On page 7 of the presentation, I quote that water and sanitation services should be financially self-sustaining apart from free basic services to the indigenous. All institutions in the sector should be financially sustainable. Intervention in the industry to local government institutions should be punitive. What tools is anyone providing to ensure moving towards attaining economies of scale to ensure financial self-sustainability? Chairperson, if the department focuses on public and private partnership and investment in the water and sanitation sector, how will good governance of the institution be promoted to ensure separation of policymaking, shareholding, and regulatory functions? How extensive will the reach of the private sector investment institution be in the running of the sector? Chairperson, on page 7 of the presentation, it states that the national government has an institution, constitutional mandate and duty to intervene where local government is not compliant with national maximum norms and standards for water and sanitation services. Apart from these directive issues to municipalities, which have not yielded the success rate for compliance, what other avenue will the department consider in addressing this crisis? On page 9 of the presentation, the department provides a high-level complex input on the way forward and its intentions with the use of the water boards to strengthen local government capacity in the water and sanitation service delivery. Has the department begun discussions or established work streams that of the department, water boards, national treasury, SALGA, on how exactly it intends to broaden the footprint of the water boards to take over operations and maintenance of wastewater schemes for a period of 10 to 20 years? What does this mean? And could the department provide a further briefing to the portfolio committee sometime next term, and how this could be achieved? Chairperson, with regards to the water use authorization performance improvement, correct me if I'm wrong, but the electronic water use license application and authorization system was introduced in 2017, yet the information on page 27 is slightly puzzling. Why is the department currently enforcing officials to use the system with a February 2020 deadline? Is it correct to state that the modus of operandi of application and authorization of water use license is being undertaken both manually and in some instances electronically? How many officials and provinces are lagging in optimally utilizing these WULA systems? And could the department provide a progress report on whether the due date of February 2022 will be achieved? I think the portfolio committee needs to, in addition to receiving the status report of expenditure spent versus performance in each quarter, as well as progress of Department of Water and Sanitation bulk infrastructure project, we also need a quarterly update on intervention to clear the backlog on issuing of water use license from application to authorization within 90 days. Chairperson, lastly, thus far, how many appeals have the Water Tribunal upheld, whereby the granting of license by the Department of Water and Sanitation was challenged by affected parties, such as the Center of Environmental Rights, who argued that the water use license in the case for the development of the coal-fired power station, Khanyisa, was procedurally flawed, and as it did not factor in the impact of climate change in issuing the license. Are there some discussions among the department on incorporating the effects of climate change through gas emissions in issuing licenses to new and emerging mining companies? Chairperson, on page 45, you talk of National Treasury provided comments on the business plan for the establishment of National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. Could you share with us some of the comments on the business plan? Lastly, Chairperson, you know, when I'm sitting here... Lastly, Chair, I'm sitting here, I've just received a WhatsApp from one of the staff members from the Department of Water and Sanitation. They say their contracts, they were contracted by the department in 2017 until last year, October, when the department decided not to renew their contracts. They've been giving them 3 months, 6 months in renewal all these years. Sometimes they will go home without notices and no payment. Let me just share this. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chairperson.
I won't be long. Firstly, I would like to thank the department for a well-prepared presentation this morning. I want to make one comment before I ask two questions, Chairperson. Firstly, I totally agree that water boards need to assist municipalities. The problem with that would be, Chairperson, is most of the municipalities are in financial difficulties. That's why they cannot manage their own water and purification, water purification plants, as well as their wastewater treatment plants. Due to the fact that there's high water losses, even water losses or sewer water losses in our systems that goes to our wastewater treatment plant. The question then would be is, how would the department assist municipalities if those municipalities financially aren't sustainable themselves? And secondly is, we really need to get COCTA and National Treasury on board on the equitable share, because that's the only way I see the department can assist municipalities. If they can't pay that, the department can tap into the equitable share. Now, that is just, maybe we can get more clarity on that. The first question then is your NWRIA. I totally agree with the concept that bring everything together, your assets, TCTA, and the water trading entity. The question that I need to know is, we know that we are sitting with billions outstanding from, once again, the same municipalities that's not paying their bills. And we are sitting with increase in these debt more than 1 billion per year. This surely is debt within that new organization. And how would we deal with that if we struggle to get take-off agreements, like we've now heard about in Zimbabwe project, that if the fiscus is not going to finance that, this project cannot go ahead because we don't have enough offtake agreements. So the department sits with the water trading entity. I'm not sure what the amount is now, 15 billion debt, that maybe I'm wrong, but it should be in that region. The question is, that debt in that new, in the books of the new entity, how would that reflect when you want to take up loans for projects? And then the second one on that is, since we know that municipalities or most of the water trading entities like Rand Water, you know, they sell a lot of water to 11, 12 million people, and they get an income. So they can pay for that water that they receive. The question is, if it's in other areas and there's other municipalities, Bloemwater, that struggle to get their money from Bloemfontein, Seribeng, that is a huge risk. You divide Seribeng up into two parts, putting them at Magalies and Bloemwater, you will have this problem that the debt, they will just create that same debt that Seribeng has accumulated over the years. How would that work? Then my last question is, Chairperson, on the Blue Drop report, maybe Leonardo should just explain to me. I know there's 5 points that you measure on, and he's mentioned that the quality of the water, the compliance, quality compliance makes out 35% of the scoring. But surely the end result is clean drinking water. So I'm just afraid that people with their management of their plants and financial management and all those kind of stuff, they score high but very low on the quality. Surely, if the quality the measures on the quality of the water does not meet the minimum standards, then they should fail. And maybe I should just get a better explanation on that from Leonardo. Thank you. Or then from the DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mete.
Thank you very much, my apology, I was disconnected. I think Chair, thanks very much for the opportunity. And let me also thank the Minister of Water, DG, and team for the presentation in response to the State of the Nation address. Chair, I think up front, I just wanted to say the President has delivered his State of Nation address on the 10th, and followed by that was a debate on the 14 and 15 and the reply on the 16th. And I think members of Parliament have made sure that they gave their political debates and respond to the issues that the President has outlined in the State of Nation address, Chairperson. I think I'm proud of the members of the African National Congress who are at the forefront, who are representing the African National Congress in terms of outlining the policies that the African National is intending to do in this coming year, Chairperson. The State of Nation address, Chair, was very clear, and importantly, it has touched on water, which is key to our own people, Chairperson. And I think our responsibility is that we also pass the budget vote that is people at the end. The community in South Africa will be able to get a water. The State of Nation address was very clear, Chairperson, in terms of where are we as government. It was informing the public on the government's work in the previous year and how do we intend to move forward in terms of addressing the challenges that we have and the achievements. The State of the Nation address was also reflecting on the country's domestic affairs and international relations share, because we as South Africa were the lead country in the world, Chairperson. Most of the countries are relying on us in terms of the work that we are doing in their country. Also, the State of Nation address was also highlighting plans and projects underway, Chair, like your Umzimvubu and all these other projects that the government are intending to do in the coming years, Chairperson. We understand the challenges that we are facing, but I think we are still need in Chair. We're still on course for the mandate of the that we are given by the mandate of the people of this country. Chairperson, I think the state of national address is of Parliament, and therefore, I mean, you must rally towards that state of national address and be able to hold the department, each department, accountable for the year under review, Chairperson. There's no way that we can undermine, and the President has given hope to the people of this country. Therefore, Chair, as the member of this portfolio committee, I want to support the State of Nation Address as it was outlined, and also the debate that was that followed through after that, Chairperson. My question one, Chair, in terms of whilst we are strengthening and extending the roles and responsibilities and the capacity of water boards, I think we should also elevate our discussion in terms of how do we recover funds or debts owed to water boards by different municipalities. We understand that we do have challenges. Our people are not working. COVID-19 has hit this country hard. But we must make sure that we start discussing on how government departments and our communities are paying water boards so that we should not cripple the mandate of the water boards, Chairperson. I think they play a very critical role in the water and sanitation sector. The principle of the UWP principle, actually, it must be elevated. Those who can pay from our communities, those who can pay the services that municipalities are rendering, I think we must start engaging them so that we can be able to sustain the water infrastructure and the provision of water to our own people. So the issue of the interministerial committee, which was dealing with the water debts, I think it must be activated and give reports to this committee in the near future. The other matter that I want to raise is issue or administer grants such as RBG and WISER. I think we should also tap in the MIG, because some of the municipalities, not all, some of the municipalities are misusing this grant. Others are paying salaries whilst communities are still struggling in terms of the services, not only in water. But I think as the department, we must be through the DDM model, yes, of course, we have to zoom in that space so that we can be able to see how that 5% in the human resource and the capacity within the municipalities. And on the other issue, the bucket eradication program is still a challenge in the department. I think in the near future, the department will be able to brief us in terms of where are they in terms of addressing the bucket eradication program in the country. We members of the portfolio committee from the African National Congress and Al-Jama in particular have went to the oversight, which is part of our constitutional mandate as the portfolio committee. We went for an oversight in the Eastern Cape in addition to other oversights that we've done in Gauteng and Limpopo. We have visited some projects in the Eastern Cape. Uzimbuku was one of them. We went to Amatol, we went to Nelson Mandela. Most of the projects are up and running. Unfortunately, other members of the political parties were not there, but they will get a report, which was pleasing to some of us. As much as we agree that other communities do not have water as we are speaking, but we are pleased of some progress that the department has made in most of the projects that we have visited in the Eastern Cape. Manfra usually says, we don't have a crisis in water. We've got dams, we've got oceans in the country. So we must tap in the issue of desalination, because we have visited Port Alfred. There's a desalination plant which is up and running there. Unfortunately, most of majority of the communities are not receiving water out of that process. But those who are receiving, we want to appreciate and we want government through the Department of DWS to make sure that they extend that program to other communities and to the community around that can plan B, so that all the wards can be able to benefit. On the UMZ, the access road, and we are appealing to the department that they must be able to interact with the national treasury, the private sector or externalizers, so that this program, this Umzimbubu water project, can be a success, Chairperson. There's no way that we can fool the people of the Eastern Cape. There's no way we can mislead the president in terms of this project. I know it does challenges, but we've got the confidence of you, Honorable, and the DM and the team, in terms of making sure that this entire project, your phase two, because at least the phase one is on course, the phase two of the projects, we secure funding for that. We are waiting for the speech by the finance minister tomorrow and hoping that this matter will be touched. But nevertheless, government is ready to address the water challenges in the areas of Eastern Cape. But we have confidence, Chairperson, in the leadership of Minister Senzo Mtunu and the team, and we are hoping to interact with you going forward. And we also thinking that in your budget vote, you will be able to detail some of the programs that we have as government. We will be able to detail some of the challenges that we are having in terms of the non-functionality of the water treatment plants that we have. We're hoping to get information on how the city of Tshwane will be able to deal with the rival, or how government led by the African National Congress will be able to intervene in areas like Tshwane, so that the people of Hammanskraal will be able to make my point on that. Thanks.
Chairperson, can I raise a point of order? I did not want to disrupt, but don't say ha-ha-ha-ha when you do not hear what I want to speak about.
Can
just say ah-ah-ah-ah-ah-ah-ah. What is that? Because I'm raising a point of order here. Chairperson, we are directing questions to the department and the executive. Members of the ANC must not respond to us. They are members. We are holding the executive into account. Unless people would really want to apply to be officials, they must apply and be DGs of this portfolio committee. They must leave it. We are here together with them. We must hold the executive into account. They must not respond to us.
No body disrupt you when you speak. Don't disrupt. Take it.
No, but it's wrong. When something is wrong, it's wrong. So they must not respond. We are holding the executive into account. We are asking them. They must tell us if they can't respond to us. If the department cannot respond to us, they must tell us.
Order, sir.
Don't disrupt you. You were wrong, but it didn't help you.
I'm calling order. Order is not wrong. I'm calling order.
Seki has not spoken. How can it be out of order? Seki.
When that is said, out of order is grace. I said to you. I did not want to disrupt the air, but I'm calling order so that would say that they cannot also follow in the same step.
Can I talk
to you? Unless you want me to decide that they must switch you off because you don't want to listen to the meeting.
No, you can do that if this is how you operate. You can do that. I don't care.
Yeah, but you can't disrupt us consistently. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think, Chair, the President has got the right to raise issues as the President of this country. And the President oversees all departments and oversees the country. So there's no limitations of what the President should raise or not. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, in relation... No, I was just making that preface, Chair. In the presentation, the department is saying that they are in a plan of taking over the functions of wastewater treatment. I thought, Chair, maybe the first approach should be about consequence management. What are the challenges? Is it purely about capacity? Could it include maybe mismanagement before that decision could be taken? So I think as much as we have observed these challenges on wastewater treatment, to take that function as a department, to me, it's a little bit premature. Let's understand exactly what are the issues before that could happen. The 300 days to 90 days, and I want to say thank you to the presentation, Chair. But the manner in which the presentation was made, it's like there are some issues that are not finalized. Is it purely on the appointment of warm bodies? Or what is this that is holding the 90 days? Because on the technical, the application processes, those challenges, I heard about them. But still, the figure that is being presented here, that did not achieve the 90 days, it's too much. It's a big number, Chair. Can the department maybe indicate on the future applications, how do we avoid this? And also with the current applications, when can we solve them? I think the department should also say, if it's more than 100, if it's more than 90 days, how many days? Because it may be less than 300. Sometimes it may be more than 300. And then water set aside. Chair, can the department talk about the revenue on these water set aside in the rural areas? Because there's an issue there on whether in some rural areas people are paying and some they're not paying, or in totality it's a set aside. But I think we are expecting revenue in one way or the other. Can the department say that? On the National Water Regulatory Authority, the balance sheet, I think the DG is saying that the balance sheet of that institution or of that agency will be good. But I assume that it's a new entity. How would they have attracted the investment for them to have a good balance sheet? I want to agree on the one of making one entity. I think we have been talking about this. Again, the National Water Regulatory Authority versus TCTA. The DG is saying that when we are having the National Water Regulatory Authority, the fundraising will be threefold than the TCTA. Now, DG, that's too good to be true. I mean, these are the same individual, I assume, that are going to be doing this job. Now, to make it threefold, whereas we have the current TCTA, then that means you are losing a lot of benefits that we could have got when we have this National Water Regulatory Authority. But to me, I think the threefold tends to be too good to be true. On the green drop, Chairperson, almost. Just on a side issue, not in the presentation, but I think in Gauteng, in some parts of Gauteng, and I think in some parts of the provinces or other provinces, there's been a warning of people who have got some stomachache, diarrhea, and then we were advised to boil water. Can the department maybe just say something on that in relation to blue water drops? Because I assume this is one area that the department is very sensitive on, and I believe the research commission plays a very important role there. The last point, Chair, is on Mzimvubu. The presentation says it was it started in 2016. Maybe if we could just a summary, because we don't want a failure moving forward. Just a summary or a reminder on 2016 up to today, what made us not to succeed on building this dam, and what do we do moving forward to avoid those failures? Is it budgetary constraint? Is it capacity and competency? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And good morning to the Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister, the Department, and the leadership of the Portfolio Committee. Ndiyabulisa bantu benkosi. Chair, let me start from the President's speech. I think it's proper for all of us to understand that the president, as the overall head of the country, he moves as like a movement. He moves to different provinces and listens to different people. And now that empowers him more outside the process of administration on what are the challenges of water and sanitation. I think his presentation was visionary in terms of how best can we intervene on the issue of providing water for our people. And I think we should agree that he has articulated that well, given his proposals and his views on how best can we intervene on the process. I'm happy that the speech of the president happened after we went to an oversight. I was more welcoming on the speech of the president, given the experience that we had with those that attended the oversight in the Eastern Cape. And I'm more empowered today. Starting from the issue of strengthening support, institutional reform, very clear, Honorable Minister, when you speak about tampering with the legislative framework and the constitutional mandate, those really need a different approach on what institutions and how the department is going to address the issue of providing water. I'm raising this because it's a big issue which is confusing. Municipalities expect the intervention of the national and you expect the province, and the national is sitting saying, here is my area, here is my line. That needs a clear thinking on how best can we deal with this issue. We must not think that it's an easy process, because one of the issues is that when the Constitution is saying that, is it giving enough budget to these spheres of government for that intervention, more especially the national, because the Constitution also recognizes the role of municipalities to provide water. What does that mean? Where are we in terms of how do we intervene in the process? So I'm raising the issue that it could confuse some of the people and the structures that are working on the water provision. But it's necessary that we must be at work. We must be at work and make sure that how best can we give dignity to our people. The other issue, Chair, is the issue of the lack of skills. The lack of skills on all spheres. We must not the lack of skills from all spheres is a huge problem. because when we visited all those schemes that we visited in the Eastern Cape, we're very clear that some of the people that are managing these schemes are old people. There's nothing wrong about their being aging. But the issue is, what then becomes our role and what becomes our processes when those people leave us? That is why some of them, they do not leave. They change the caps. So the lack of skills is a challenge where the department needs to put a process to skill the officials, starting from those that are in the department, so that we have a very clear geographic and demographic participation of our people in the programs. I think Honorable Zeki raised the issue of the eradication of bucket system. This is not coming very clear to us. Where are these areas and how far are they and what are the bottlenecks in the process? Remember, there's a new approach to deal with the eradication of bucket system. It is now given a responsibility to a water project. Can we get that presentation? What does it mean? What implies for the on the eradication bucket system to be in the water project? The other issue, Chair, it's a pity that this is not the report for the oversight. But I just want to say to the department, I think seeing is better than presentation. May have been problematic in their reports, which I think perhaps they need to have a different way of presenting to us, more especially the implementation of our project, so that we are able to understand. You see, the confusion that has been given to us on some of the projects. There's a Thomo project, there's a Butterworth project, there is an Amatole project, a very good project on Khokha, more rural areas where the pipes have to come through the mountains, but they've got a beautiful scheme. There is not enough budget. It's important that we get to know what are the challenges of this. I want to raise again the issue that says it is not necessarily the scarcity of water. What is a problem is the infrastructural establishment with budget to make water to be available, to be accessible to our people. Because there is water under the ground. We must appreciate the national investment that we had. But the issue is, Honorable Minister, is the budget, there's a need to have a very clear financial model on infrastructure, on water provision. I think the President's speech has spoken on that. And I think we should not beat about the bush. For us to succeed, Treasury must be able to consider. And I so wish that Treasury must go to this project. Treasury must go to this project and presentation is made so that they are able to see where are the challenges. The projects of Umzimvubu, we've been laughing on the access road. What has the access road got to do with water? There's a very clear clarity on what is the need for that access road and establishment of the site. But what is confusing me, Chair, on the presentation, there is a mention of another dam, Mvogazi Dam, within Umzimvubu. I'm not clear now where does that come from. Is it a new dam or is a dam that has been there? What is it for in terms of that particular program? there is a project called the Inclaney Citizen Sarabatman. I want to speak my experience on where are the challenges of water. They've got beautiful schemes, highly technical therefore. Highly technical, but the issue is, do we have money? I couldn't understand them when they always say, but we need money, but we want money. But they've got very clear plan how to implement the project. Unless we don't support those views. It's very important, Honorable Minister, that we must move with the progress and the performance of these projects that are highly, highly infrastructural because of the rural nature of our areas. In Gambia desalination, yo, that's a good program. I don't want to lie. But how the delays have been caused, talk about the financial limitations. But what is a weakness, a huge challenge in Inkambi? That phase that has been established for more than 4 years only feeds to the middle class. The wards of that particular area, which is the majority, are getting zero. And the issue that they are raising is an issue of moving to another phase so that we are able to give water to those people. The question is, how could it happen that it is 4 years with one phase and with one race group and the others are not getting water? That's a huge challenge that perhaps needs to be looked at in terms of that desalination project. But I think the project on its own is a sustainable mechanism because water comes from the sea. And the sea is there for life. So it's important that we come nearer to those particular areas. KSG has got a very important high barrier project schemes. They have lined up in terms of their infrastructural development. They need budget. And they are ready. They need budget. Now, one of the issues that becomes very clear is that there is a poor communication information about projects within the community. And communities, remember, they've got a responsibility to monitor their projects. If then they are not getting that information, that communication is going to be confusing as it is today. I don't want to tell you what happened when we get there by community leaders. But it's important that we give dignity to the owners of development, where we are winning and where we are not winning. They must move with us in our processes. The last one, Chair, is an issue of a problem which I think needs to be looked into. How best can we have a different financial infrastructural model that is not within TCTA? You see, Karobo, the issue that has been raised initially, the institutional reform, it moves from what are the challenges? How did we take the process forward? Where did we win? Where we did not win? How do we then make a turnaround strategy so that we are result-based? And it needs different models to be established. I feel that we've arrived in the process that the infrastructure for water needs to be given a very clear lineup, which talks about these are the projects, where is the money, and how do we make a very clear financial model so that we are able to give water to our people. The speech of the president was on point, because number one, You can't expect the president to get to the detail of what Honorable Tune is supposed to say, but is raising the vision on how the country is moving and what are the challenges of the country in terms of water, giving a mandate to the executive, a mandate to us as a portfolio committee to move and implement what the president has seen as a need for the country. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity. I appreciate the department must move on. It must say to us what is right. It must say to the National Treasury what is right. Treasury is there to implement projects and give funding where there is a need. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Let me just say myself also in just prefacing and also putting my debate. Please do allow me as a chairperson to listen to all of you, whether you put political debate or uncertain debate. But please, when you politic about issues, expect political answers to your politics. When you talk administrative issues, expect administrative answers to your input. We must never feel that it is wrong for somebody to rebut your political input politically, and then you become destructive in the process. Let's all of us listen to one another. I know we have got different mandates, we've got different views. I have a right to listen to all of you and still keep my level mind to have listened to you. And I'm sure the minister incoming, they will also be in the process of wanting to answer us both politically and administratively, because our issues are both political and administrative. With that in mind, as the chairperson of the committee, I did not mandate Honorable Hendricks to go meet the deputy, the Minister of Finance and say things on the behalf of the committee to the minister. So whatever he's going to say, he must say it. He's saying it as Al Jamaa, not as the Portfolio Committee of Water and Sanitation, because we have not given him that mandate in whatever he's going to say. But he has a right to say it as a party representative of Al Jamaa. But he must never create an impression that he's representing water and sanitation, because he doesn't. And I think we need to make that point clear. On behalf of the committee, Honorable Mshala, I think in the last meeting, I pronounced that there is a summit, late as it was. I said, yes, it is late, but I'm begging party members, and I mean committee members, please to attend the invite as it is sent to me, late as it was, as the chairman of the committee. So it is not going to be right for you to say it is a decision not to invite opposition parties because we were invited, but it was late, I accept. So if, because you have already other commitment, you might not have been able to attend the summit. But an impression or an insinuation of the department deliberately locking us out is not correct, because they did extend the invite to us. Yes, and you raise your point even in that meeting that why is it so late? Why are we not allowed space to? I accept that those concerns you raised, but you knew them in the last meeting that there is a summit this weekend, late as it was. So I needed to because it is going to the minister might say to me, but Mashuko, I send you an invite late as it was. Why didn't you tell other members of your committee? And I will be wrong, I will be misleading him if I do not give him, say these things in this platform, because this platform is listened by other people. So I must clear that point. And the other issue, the minister, I heard you say, yes, there was a decision to take the eradication of bucket system from the department to TCTA, but you have taken it back to yourself because it was not going to work there. So I thought I heard you saying that, because if it is not the case, then I'm sure the questions that is raised by Mamsifai might be correct.
because we as a committee, we were not necessarily of the view that the bucket eradication must go to a water entity. Remember, we know how many. It is 10,798 of them. They are in Free State and they are in Northwest. So they need to be eradicated, and they can be eradicated. The commitment we once made as a committee in 2019 was that we will be finished with those in 6 months' time. It is now about 2.5 years or 3 years later. We have not done anything about them, and I think the concern is genuine then. I was in the Eastern Cape when on the Mzimbubu a visit or by the oversight. When before I went to Mzimbubu, I was a little bit worried as to, as Mam Sistra is raising. Why do you talk about roads? We are water. But when we arrived there, and most especially because I was already coming from the Lesotho water project also, then I understand the relationship between the road and our work of access to where we are going to work. And I've seen it. It is, that road is still far away from being a proper road that far, even if it is. Actually, it was passed in 2015. I'm sure when we were there, we were told that we started working on this issue in 2019. But I think but this is a fact we must tell all the time rather than ignoring them as if we do not know of them when we do. It being the case, and you, in the report you say, there is phases of the project. Phase 1, 2, 3, and 4. And phase 1 of it is the establishment of the access road. The ultimate result, we were going to have a dam 68 meters deep, the highest deep in South Africa. But that will be realized on the fourth stream of our decision making. Now, what we really need you, Minister, to guard against is for you to come and say you cannot no longer do program 2 or program 3, as you envisage it in your report, that then we can go and tell the president. But I heard you in the summit saying you will knock in all the doors. The NYRA might be the root. Involvement of the private people, the civil society, and big businesses to partake in the Lesotho process. Minister, there are hotels built on our way to the dam that we're going. There are schools that are built. There are entertainment that is done. So you in the process you involve other businesses to tap into what you are doing in building the road infrastructure and the water infrastructure that you want to do. I think we must do it here, because it is only the private people that have got resources enough to can help us to achieve this particular point. I think that, Minister, in your response to what the SONA said about us, I can't floor you. I can't floor the presentation speaks to what that the SONA want to do. What is important is for us to see to it that your commitment you are making shall be adhered to by yourself. I'll propose that we sometimes get a desktop way of working. The desktop that on Mzimbubu, we are here, we are going to be here by this time, and who is going to do that? In the deletion processes, all those issues that you have resolved upon in a desktop process, which is time-bound, outcome-based, and we can then therefore hold you liable or responsible or accountable to those commitments, and all the time you will be responding to where lies the difficulty, what is the bottleneck. The president has already created a department in his office of the bottleneck eradication system. So, meaning where you find bottlenecks, you will rush to that particular department. This is a bottleneck, take it out. This is a bottleneck, take it out. It will help us. And to me, I must say that I find the response of yourself to SONA imperatives very helpful, very outward,
and very profound on what we are going to do. Just do it in order for us to can be seen to have listened to the SOLA appropriately. And I want to allow you, Minister, and your team to respond to the questions as raised by members of the committee earlier in the morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think we will share the responses with the deputy ministers that are here and also with our department led by the DG. Number one, there was a question whether we've considered budgeting in what is termed zero-based budgeting, and that we tend to be piecemeal. Well, I would have said it's rather better to that we direct the question or have a discussion with finance, that is Treasury Department, because I don't think that there is a department that can embark on zero budgeting when it hasn't started nationally. It's something that was discussed and led by Treasury. It was discussed at some point. The pros and cons were put forward. The approach and when it can start was discussed, and I'm sure Treasury can speak better than that, and therefore I don't think that we can in isolation as a department be expected to embark on the zero-based budgeting process ourselves. That's number two. One of the observations that one honourable member of Parliament from Al-Jama observes, he talks about the oversight visit by the Portfolio Committee of Water and Sanitation from National, and he somehow concludes that after observing the projects that the honourable members observed, he concludes in part that the department is lame duck, and I went to check what exactly lame duck means, that we're a lame duck, and I find that it means an ineffectual or unsuccessful somebody. Sorry about that. Now, I'm trying to grapple with that problem. How are we perceived as ineffectual? And how are we perceived as unsuccessful? he didn't provide the answers, the basis, that is the basis for that kind of conclusion. However, I think you mentioned the Tsomo, which is a river between Mthatha and Ngcobo, and I think it's in reference to the project that Honorable Nancy also mentioned. Now, that project is a successful project. The last time, last year, we visited it, it was more than 99% complete. We are due to get an update when we go on a one-day work session, either at the end of this month or beginning of this next month, or when we'll be going to Kabega to assess a Noikhedacht project and other related ones and the situation of water there and in Sarapatma. Now, but this is a big project on Somo, which is basically will help avail water to some one or two villages in Ngobo, but basically provide water between that scheme and Butterworth and cover Butterworth, the town itself. It's quite a big scheme. That it is 99%, that 99%, 99.7% or so, which was referred to when the to observe it, was only referring to the completion of the building itself, the pump and the treatment plant there and so on. We were yet to deal with financing the piping, in other words, the layout of pipes, right up to all the villages there and right up to Butterworth. And at that time, when we visited, it required 700 million. And we met even the following day to deal with that with the mayors, both locally and districts. And we all placed money to deal with that situation to cover the people. Our understanding is that that still stands. We have not been given any report that that project has run out of money. And I don't know why there would be confusion. We will, however, follow that up, because if I heard well from Honourable Member Nancy, she spoke about difficulty or confusion. From where we sit, we understand that the project is going on, and the initial estimation was that there would be that money that we pledged would be handy until about June this year, if not up to the end of the year. We will get to know about it. So there should be no confusion about that. He also spoke about North Gedacht, which is a scheme that is more than 98% to completion, and we'll be going there to see and confirm that. I can mention that, and it's a success. It's not ineffectual. It's not unsuccessful. The only challenge that I can refer to going north with the province is that there's a presidential project in Mthatha that doesn't seem to have made the required progress as was envisaged. And it is basically due to high political instability that has been in that municipality, and finally affecting management of projects and other related matters. I was made to understand recently that that problem has been overcome, and that things should start all over again, and we will be going there to confirm that, and then to resuscitate well functionality. They even have appointed a full municipal manager there, and it could be a point that some of the projects that stalled could now go on water and sanitation. We ourselves were worried about the slow process of this. And Alfred Nzo, we know there's a dam in last term that will be very helpful to a large extent, supplying two or so municipalities in that district. One of the municipalities there, and all we need to do is strengthen reticulation of water from that dam to cover villages that have not yet been covered up to now from that dam in Alfred Nzo, so that water can even go down to cover the whole of the municipality where it is down to the next one, Mount Daylif. So I really would have loved if the member was still around to check what is this lame duck labeling of ourselves, so that we can understand and maybe remedy the situation of lame darkness. But I'm just pointing at progress that we are aware of, including in Lambe, even though that scheme of TESAL is experiencing a few problems, we will be checking that and intervening there to assist them. Now, the next one is, well, there was a mention in the general statement by the honorable member, Pego Mushala, that about the agency and about the turnaround situation, basically saying that is the same. 2021 and 2022 is the same. I'm not sure about that, but it could be an opinion, different opinions on that. But in this sauna, I think the president was much more on the reality of the challenges and much more on what needs to be done and when and how, maybe more than it would have happened last year. Of course, supported by us, and we can vouch that even via through this initial response, that what we advised for SONA and what came out from and through the president, it's something that we are aligned to 100% and agreed to, and we believe that we are on it in terms of going forward. Come 2023, we will be together assessing whether what we're saying now will indeed hold. But from where we sit, we don't know anything that will prevent us from making sure that what came out on SONA with regard to water will hold, including the turnaround in areas where turnaround is required. Every aspect of it, as has been outlined by the DG, is not from a desktop, it's from discussions, it's from the ground, it's from overall discussion amongst ourselves. The agency, I may not be sure about what the president would have said last year about the agency, except that he would have outlined the necessity thereof. But now we are at a point where the bill is ready for consultation. I think we just have to take it to the next cabinet and then they give us a go-ahead for consultation. If last year the same was said, I would need to be corrected on the readiness of the bill on the agency, because we have reviewed all the discussions that took place last time and reapplied our mind after we got appointed. And where we had doubts, we synergized our discussion and agreed that it's a project that requires to be implemented. But we also addressed concerns that some of us had about the agency and how it was looked at and was satisfied that we are now in a position to make progress. Let me, now, there was also a general statement on corruption. I think the situation of the department and the allegations and the verification and investigations on corruption is true. we did talk at length about this in the summit to say and we observed this when we came in into the department that there are quite a lot of investigations on wrongdoing, and we even observed that a difference between what I've seen in terms of SIU reports and so on, it would involve high-ranking officials. Here, there are quite a remarkable number of low-placed officials, which is something that we need to be interested in how it happened. Administrators there, administrative clerk, and so on. But overall, the department has an unacceptable high number of investigations running currently by the SIU, by SAPS, and it's something that would show or reflect what has been happening over time in the department. And now we're there. We are not going to say any investigation must stop. Rather, any investigation must be strengthened and finalized. And hence, we've had a meeting with SIU. We are due to have another meeting with SAPS once we are ready, just to check their progress, because this is 2022. What I'm talking about was 2020-2021. So that we see the difference between when last we met them and when where they are and so on. Others are fairly new. They were declared by the president or agreed to by the president when we had arrived already and so on. So there is quite a lot of wrongdoing that has happened. Now, you will note, Honorable Mosala, that one of the things that have happened is that we have filled up the post of Director General, which has been held on an acting position for some time, which was a weakness on the side of the department. We also had an acting CFO for some time, and we filled that post. We also have an acting DDG on corporate services. We filled up that post. We're now grappling with filling up the other two regulations and water services management, and then finalize issues of discipline or investigations of wrongdoing on the third DDG on infrastructure. But we're determined to eliminate all corruption in whatever form, firstly by strengthening the department, strengthening all its systems, including procurement, which DG is dealing with, so that we close whatever gaps, because that lead to corruption. And therefore, we want to assure everybody here that we are dealing with that matter quite strongly. Now, I had at some point an occasion where I observed Dr. Alan Busak speaking on ENCA, saying ministers were reshuffled, referring to Minister Sisulu, who was in water and sanitation and human settlement, and saying she was replaced by a friend of the president, who in turn has sort of shuffled a case. I don't understand what he was talking about, and we will be writing to Busak to say, can he provide us with the information that he was referring to when he said there's a wrongdoing by somebody which we set aside. I don't know of any, and in fact, there's no such. When a person is speaking something that is absolutely unfounded, it was Dr. Busak. He didn't know what he was told. What was shuffled were ministers by the president. but he didn't, in my understanding, shuffle criminal cases in the Department of Water and Sanitation. And therefore, we have never stopped any investigation whatsoever in the department. And we'll never seek to stop any investigations and so on. But of course, if the bottom line will be when he responds to us to say what is that he was referring to, because we have a recording by Dr. Alan Pusak making such a statement. Now, on the other general statement related to partnerships and water boards, we'll make ourselves very clear to the portfolio committee on these matters, the response. Well, working with the environment, I think Honorable Mohlala went a long way on collaboration with the ecological infrastructure and so on. And we have declared in the summit that we don't see ourselves working alone. We want to collaborate. And as a result, Department of Environmental Affairs were there. They made a presentation. And we will go on strengthening our collaboration. As I talked to you, we did actually say we're going to require maximum collaboration within the water sector. No, within the public sector in the first place. That is within between us and other departments, of which environmental affairs is one. Local government, they were even there. And the agriculture, land reform were there. Human settlement were there, and water services authorities were there in their numbers. We wanted to strengthen that side, and know what we want to collaborate on first. And then we said, we also, on the other hand, want to collaborate with the private sector, including non-governmental organizations, including other stakeholders that are in water, and all of them were represented there. It's an effort on our side, believing in it, not just marking it a box or ticking a box. We really believe in those, and therefore this will be ongoing. Work in terms of strengthening collaboration work where it is necessary. We note your emphasis on ecological infrastructure. We'll look at that. Now, I think the Chair has clarified the issue of the invitations to the summit. Thank you very much, Chair. We appreciate that. Now, let me just touch on a little bit on the partnership, institutional reform, review of boards, which goes under, including capacity and other general characterization of municipalities as water services authorities. And I hope that once we explain this, we will be one going forward with the members of the portfolio committee so that we don't keep on going to and fro on the matter. But of course, reserving your right to do that, but with clarity in terms of we went to all provinces in South Africa from the period we were appointed up to the 3rd of January this year. And these were three-day working sessions in each of the provinces with all stakeholders that would be found in that province. The only difference was that it took us 4 days in the Western Cape, and of course we would also look at some of the projects and some of the schemes while there and so on. Now we met even government, we met our offices, we met all water authorities found in that province. We met stakeholders, we met, I don't know who we didn't meet, all water users, agencies, business that play roles in water, both in agriculture, mining, and other business organizations. Now, what is the general characterization of the water services in particular, as opposed to water resource management, which we said, although it is something that we have to focus on and ensure, because it provides security of water to people in South Africa and so on. But the general grievance in the country is on the side of water services to communities, to peace, both agriculture and mining. Therefore, we are going to have to be more and much more upfront in that regard, while continuing with the efforts of ensuring a better horizon in terms of water security in the country. Now, what is the general characterization? It is that we have been practicing a situation where national government, generally with boards and with districts, will provide bulk water, and then municipalities, including some districts, understood to be providing by and large water on in terms of reticulation to communities and to companies and so on. Over time, it is not difficult to discern that where there is a discernible weakness leading to the grievance general is on reticulation more than on providing bulk. Hence your dams, which are full by and large, to a large extent in all provinces, where taps are dry and communities still struggle to get water easily within their yards. It is now our quest that we focus on that and provide water to households, as it were. But these water services authorities that are expected to provide water, what is their general characterization? One, it is that they themselves, when we interacted with them, it's not theory, they say, department, ministry, we don't have capacity. This is in terms of planning for water services. We don't have capacity in terms of personnel. We don't have capacity in terms of skills. We don't have capacity in relation to funding, what we need to do. All right? Clear. More than 99% of municipalities said so. Now, even in the metros, even in the major cities in the country, and they were asking for this and that, asking for this and that, and so on. What else are they saying? By and large, they are saying we have rotting. No, we have aging infrastructure. What does aging infrastructure do? It's not only aging; it is dysfunctional to an extent. In some cases, very, very remarkable. What else is there? It is no longer adequate because of more demand on water and sanitation than it was the case when when that infrastructure was built. And so that characterizes the situation in terms of water and sanitation services. Now, having mentioned this, this is where leaks come from. In other words, up to 42%. This is where failure to provide services come from, because you don't have infrastructure that covers the whole population. That is where cuts happen, apart from load shedding, and so on and so on. Now, having seen all this character of this characterization of the water services authorities, we then say, firstly, we need to streamline working together with the Department of COCTA, who is a water authority in the country, so that we invest once and for all on water authorities now known and streamlined across the country, as opposed to the current dispensation, where in one province that district is a water authority, and that local municipality at the same time is also a water authority within the same district and so on. But in some provinces, it is different. All locals are water authorities, but all districts are not. In some cases, some of the districts are, but others are not. So we want to streamline that. And the first meeting